Hello, everyone, and welcome to Myopia This Week. Now, I think it's worth addressing, like we've addressed in other places, the importance of what's going on right now. I know a lot of you over the last few months, as the chaos has incurred with the illness and everything, have turned to us as a way to have a little levity, a little lightness, a little humor. And we don't generally veer towards politics for a lot of reasons. First, again, it's supposed to be a light show, and if politics are stressing you out, poking at them and pointing it out is not exactly going to be helpful. However, for those of you who follow the Twitter, you know that we went dark last week, not releasing the episode. We had released the Twilight Zone already, of course. However, we were going to release a Patreon episode and such, and we decided against it to bring attention. The Blackout Tuesday was a way to make sure people were paying attention to the news and not to what we do. And frankly, I'm a teacher, as you guys know. And so I make a point of looking at situations in our world at the time that I do think are history-making, and I think this is today. Obviously, this episode's coming out. We're getting back on schedule because we know we need you and you need us, and sometimes due to stress and depression and such, it's hard to have these little interruptions because you like to listen to us as a way to get away from those stresses, I would assume. It can't possibly be because we're funny or teaching you anything. But with that in mind, you know, I've protested in the past. I'm protesting now. I've made donations to the ACLU and other Black Lives Matter charities. And I encourage you to donate to charities that you think and feel will be doing good in this world, because I think that's all we can hope for. With this in mind, of course, we sympathize with families who have lost. We have been out and active, and I encourage you to do the same. I'm recording this on Georgia's primary voting day, and it was utter chaos. And I encourage you to be active and part of what's going on. In future recordings, you might hear us reference such things. Not in this one. We recorded this one earlier. But no, we're not changing the politics. We're not all of a sudden going to become, you know, Charlie Kirk or Chapo Draft House or something. We're going to talk about movies from the 80s and 90s and 2000s and make fun of them and help you guys get through the week and remind you to not revisit a lot of what we've done. But we thought it was worthwhile to take a moment and call attention to the moment as it is. And that's that. Thanks, guys.
Welcome to Myopia Defend Your Childhood. This week, Nick Hoffman is learning how to speak again, and we watched Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, an introduction to tort reform and divorce papers. I am host Nick Hoffman, Riff on Center Profit. On panel, we have
Lauren.
Matthew W. Quinn, who didn't see this movie in 1989 because the commercials were scary.
Hello, this is Daniel, and I'm just wondering if he wanted to shrink the kids, why he didn't leave them out in cold weather.
Hey.
Waka waka.
It's called shrinkage. I was in the pool. Dude, man, we can start there. I was at the gym, and there was a dude who was taking a shower with the curtain open, and I went in the shower, in the sauna, to ignore him. And I come out, and his leg is across the entire hallway, drying off his under thighs. What is it about boomers and getting naked in gyms? Right?
Same with women, dude.
Oh, my God.
Same. And older women do the same thing. They just walk around.
And you're just like, dude, I get it. It's a gym. I might catch a glimpse of a hoo-ha. But here's the thing. I don't need you to be stretching out, like lifting up each thing and like drying it off. We're adults here, man. You can dry yourself without showing everything off. Ugh.
Mighty, just letting it all hang out.
At a certain point, I guess you just stop giving a fuck.
Yes.
Well, speaking of not giving a fuck, let's talk about child abuse. This is 1988's Rick Moranis vehicle?
I think it's 89. Because I can remember this one.
Well, Lottie freaking da! I mean, I love... We've gotten into Matt's memory before on this show. The guy's like got a Sherlock-esque mind palace, and apparently the last year of the Reagan administration didn't make the cut.
Yeah.
But
I was 1 year old during the last year of the Reagan
I remember the 1988 election because I got a sticker.
Jesus Christ.
I bet it was the best goddamn sticker that's ever been given.
Well, when you're four, they tend to be that way.
Well, there you go.
What do you remember about the movie?
Yeah. I'm a Bushman.
Well, I just remember the commercials were scary. I didn't want to see it. My cousins who were visiting did, and Grandpa Quinn had to stay home with me, and I don't think he was happy about it.
I will say, I didn't see the movie until probably I was five or six.
Yeah, same.
But I did remember going to what is now Disney Studios. Back then was MGM, and they have a huge Honey, I Shrunk the Kid playground, which was phenomenal.
Hell yes. Anyone else ride the bee?
Oh, my goodness.
Ride the bee at Disney? It had the saddles?
Yeah.
And you rode it? Yeah.
And it had, like, the giant Cheerio,
Oh, my God, it was the best. And the whole entire huge playground. It was amazing.
This movie was...
They played music.
That's the first thing that came to mind when I watched this. This movie is designed for a theme park. Slides for grass.
Yes.
Ride the bees. Have, like, a monster fight with a scorpion.
Well, it was at Disney. And because we're old, it's now, like, it's shut down, what, I think...
5, 6, 7 years ago.
I thought it was like 10.
It could be. We were there for a friends of ours' wedding, and there were still elements of it, but it was basically unusable, right?
Right.
And it's funny because now Hollywood Studios is a thing. It's got the Star Wars, but back then there wasn't much else there, right? It was like I remember the Muppet Studio. I was too small for Tower of Terror, and they had the old Star Wars ride, the Star Tours ride, and that was kind of it. And I stayed most of the day in that playground. It was great.
And they also had a 3D little show where you wore the glasses and
the rats go under
miniature.
Your seats.
Yeah, and the rats go under your seats, and there's a snake. And yeah, I remember.
Because were we on the same scout trip where we went to Disney World? Because I definitely went to Disney World with the Boy Scouts. It was the first time I went.
Yes, and you and I went together for Jamie's wedding, and that's the wedding I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And there were still bits of it there, just not much.
Ha-ha! If you touch me while my pants are pulled down, you're going to get a merit badge, ha-ha!
Oh, gross.
I know you're younger than us, Daniel, but did you ever go...
To Disney?
Yeah, with that?
When I was, like, three.
Okay, yeah.
I think the only real thing that I remember is the Main Street Parade.
Right.
And even then, you could stick a gun to my head, and I couldn't describe it. I want to say there were, like, people walking in light bulb costumes or something. I don't know.
But to Nick's point, like, I feel like that's important to this movie because that theme park and everything they did at Disney actually made this movie big, like, bigger. More people watched it. It got, like, more popular years down the road because of it.
Well,
it kind of spread around the popularity.
Well, exactly, because when we were kids at the time, mm-hmm. the big movies were the animated ones.
Yeah.
Right.
And these were the kind of things that they seemed to pump out. This movie was a surprise success, and Hollywood Studios was the third park that they built in Disney, and so it was a fairly new park. They needed stuff, and it made sense. It fed into each other, and that's when it got its sequel. It got its sequel after everything turned out much better than they expected.
Now, one thing that I saw on IMDb was... Part of the reason this movie was so successful was because it opened up the same weekend as Batman. So Batman would sell out, and then all the families start going, well, what can we see instead? Disney's Honey, I Shrunk the Kids is also playing. Let's go see that.
Well, it's also that question at the time, which is parents liked Batman. There hadn't been one in 30 years, right? Or 23 years. And people weren't sure whether this Batman would be a campy kids one or not. And I can tell you, it's not.
It is not.
And so you're like, well, let's do the kids movie. Anyway, so I guess, Daniel, do you want to just quickly give us our plot synopsis?
Well, I mean, the title really says all you need to know. There's this...
It's about honey.
Yes,
actually,
it's about honey. So the children, they're...
The title is not named grammar properly, by the way.
Shrank the kids.
Did that bother you?
Shrank. It does, kind of. Anyway, sorry.
I think there was actually some weird booby prize award that got, but anyway...
Yes.
So there's an inventor.
Wait. It reminds me of that woman who wrote a sequel of Gone with the Wind like 10 years ago, 50 years ago.
The Wind Done Gone.
Oh, yeah, right? Yeah.
I remember
Honey,
that.
I done shrunk the kids again.
Well, you know me, guys, and I always have to like look up trivia and do research for this. So
she actually
on one
prepares.
Of my trivia, the original title of this was Teeny Weenies.
Oh, we're going to get into trivia later,
okay,
Lauren.
Cool.
We're going to get into that.
It's called Teeny Weenies, but instead they went with Honey, I Shrunk
the Kids. At least it wasn't Blue Harvest.
You know what? Better title.
I agree.
Teeny Weenies is a better title.
All right. Sorry, Daniel.
Okay, so... Wayne Szalinski is an inventor who's trying to perfect a shrink ray. So far, it's not working and instead blows things up. However, thanks to an accident with a baseball going through a window, that suddenly blocks the heat from the laser, I guess, and that's what makes the machine work. So, unfortunately, as a result of that, both his children and the neighbor children are accidentally shrunk, and he accidentally throws them out when he doesn't realize what's happened. So they have to navigate through their own backyard to get home and regain their normal size, while Wayne Szalinski and his wife and the neighbors are trying to find them.
Right. Thanks, Roger. So with that together, I mean, we can go any number of places. And I think the first place we should go is, this is a horror movie.
Yes.
Yes.
For those of you who don't know the trivia, this was originally written as a story by Stuart Gordon.
And Brian Usna.
The creative team behind Reanimator, which made Daniel nearly break the chair.
I was so excited to find that out.
A Patreon episode on Reanimator.
No, that's not going to work.
We'll get there. But the point is, this reads like a horror movie. This feels
completely
like a horror movie.
Yeah.
Well, the whole reason it exists is because the Brian Usna and Stuart Gordon, I have no idea if I'm pronouncing Brian's name correctly, so I'm sorry in advance.
It's pronounced Gordon.
Oh, there
Stuart
you go.
Gordon.
There you go.
There we go.
They directed these R-rated horror movies, Reanimator and From Beyond, but they weren't making movies that their kids could see. So it's like, well, maybe we should do that.
Well, think about it. Huge creatures that are attacking you.
Yeah.
Your almost drowning experience. Your father almost tries to eat you.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I remember from the commercial that scared me.
That's total horror. There are scarier, less scary horror films out there, folks.
Well, and it's phenomenal that it's a shrinking story that isn't Fantastic Voyage, which is what everything else is.
Well, what it is The Incredible Shrinking Man, which is also a horror movie.
And what's cool about this is, frankly, it starts out with horrible child abuse. So let's talk about how everyone hates their kids in this movie. I've never seen a kid's movie start out with more parents who are completely either indifferent or outright hate their children. We got into it already. There's the Szalinskis, because when you look at Rick Moranis, you think Eastern European. and his big issue is, I guess, a point in this movie's favor, his wife is more successful than he is, which is doesn't matter at all, right? This is 1988. That would have been a plot point in any other movie, but it doesn't matter. He's the kind of nutty, failed professor nerd type, but he actively ignores his kids. The older daughter is interested in boys. He acts like she's a child. And the nerdy kid is literally solving the problem his dad can't figure out, and he is outwardly ignoring his
son. Movie reminded me how weird teens in the 80s are. That whole bit where the daughter's talking about, like, oh my God, they broke up because she thought she was God and he disagreed. Like, God.
And I thought that was pretty clever.
I don't know. It was just kind of,
it's a funny cliched joke.
Yeah.
That was big in the 80s, I think.
And it's funny to me because now we have things like Rick and Morty and other shows written about teens where the teens are real. Like, they had an episode in the second season where the sister was jealous because she liked a boy, and the boy found a girl who had a better figure, and he dumped her. And that's the thing. We don't talk about that in the 80s. And it's just so the fact that she likes Russ, I think, is the name of the boy that she likes.
Yeah.
The neighbor kid, right?
Neighbor kid.
And we need to get into this neighbor.
I thought Russ liked her, and she was just oblivious to him.
I think
you're right, Matt. He was watching her dance to 80s synth pop, and so was Max Headroom, who is in this movie.
Help us.
Yeah, that's the dad who is obsessed with fishing. He's also in all of Zack Snyder's stuff, basically. He was, I think, Moloch in the Watchmen movie, and he was in the remake of Dawn of the Dead. For whatever reason, Zack Snyder's got a crush on this guy. But anyway,
oh my.
No, Russ is definitely being a peeping Tom.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, this is a weird 80s trope. It's really pervy to just watch a girl dance and be like, ugh.
With a mop.
By the way, I kept thinking she was Sarah Jessica Parker this whole time. Mm. The older sister, just a young Sarah Jessica, because she has that long face.
Yeah,
and she's
yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't her, and I was like, I guess I don't have to care about this actress anymore.
Yeah, she was someone who did a bunch of stuff in the 80s and early 90s. I don't think really does anything anymore.
Yeah, I get the feeling that child acting laws were very bad in the 1980s, and that many of those kids are like, no, I just never knew. Because I looked up the kids from another movie we're doing up next, well, our next episode, Little Giants. None of them have acting careers except for the asthmatic kid and the sister who plays Icebox. Because it's just like, hey, you look like you could be in a movie. And you're just like, oh, all right, creepy producer. And now, luckily, well, now Harvey's in jail.
Well, I think that's why the actress with the old sister didn't act anymore, because all the parts they're sending her required nudity, and she's like, no. And so she just went off to do something else.
That makes sense.
That's fine.
So there were creepy producers.
No shit.
Good Lord.
Harvey Weinstein. His brother's still free. Rick Moranis is...
Now, here's the thing about Rick Moranis' character. In Back to the Future, everything we need to know about Doc Brown is in that opening shot when they're panning across his lab with all the random stuff he's got there. And, like, I think there's even a case of plutonium in that opening shot, right?
Yep.
I know that's one of your favorite movies, Nick. So
it's phenomenal. It is. Yeah, yeah. It's well done. Yes.
We learn everything we need to learn about Doc Brown in that one shot.
Yep.
Here, first and foremost, he's not introduced until much later. And he doesn't really have a character. It's just, like you said, the absent father.
Yeah. I mean, and it's not inherently as much of a problem to me, because it's blessedly it's a tight 90 minutes. And I only say that not because it's a bad movie. It's a great movie. If it was 110 minutes, it would not be a great movie.
No.
The fact that nothing stops, it keeps going. Because even that, like, weird absentee parent thing at the beginning, Russ, you're going to come fishing with me. He got cut from the team. Even that, like, is 2 minutes too long.
Yeah.
Right? It's really like, oh, this dad is hitting these kids. And you don't see it, but it's right there all the time. And it's...
I think they're trying to set up that once the parents are involved and find them, that the change, right? It's trying to show the parents' dynamic and character development that they do care about their kids and want... So I think that's what it's trying to set up.
Right.
Because they gave Russ's dad an arc. He starts out being kind of disappointed his son isn't him.
Yeah.
But then they all get shrinking. He's like chain smoking and worried out of his mind.
Well, it's the classic parent thing of, what if my kid shrunk? Would I really miss them then? It turns out that you would. That
now,
you really would.
Here's the thing about this movie. I felt it would have been much better if the guy who invented the shrink ray wasn't one of their parents. Like, if it was just another Herbert West character, speaking of Stuart Gordon and the Reanimator, if it was, like, a Doc Brown figure, if it was some lonely recluse who, for whatever reason, was obsessed with the shrink ray and they just accidentally stumbled into it, yeah, it would have been kind of a Back to the Future ripoff, but it would have made more sense, emotional sense to me, at least.
I will say I disagree with you, because this is a Disney kids movie and there needs to be redemption of both the kids and the parents. I mean, like, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Like, I know him and I have gotten into this, like, spat before, because Daniel and I are secret nemeses. Mm. But
I've stabbed him 33 times so far.
Luckily, I had a cure for 34 stabbings, so he was one shy of defeating me. But the honest thing about it is, like, we're lucky that both parents are alive. This is a Disney production.
That's a great point.
Wow.
So after the horrific I don't really want kids montage at the beginning, which makes me think that Zelensky had some sort of, like, impregnation ray to get his wife interested in
it
him.
It never explains why he's obsessed with developing a shrink ray. Like, what's the ultimate end goal with
he
that?
He seems like he wants scientific fame, like his whole thing about Einstein and whatnot.
Sure, but how is a shrink ray going to do that? Like, what's the practical application?
Well, he said like, you shrink everything to transport it more easily. He says that in his speech at the thing.
No. This is vague science from a bad Twilight Zone episode. It's just, think of the implications. You're just like, well, there really are. No.
Daniel, did you not see the last scene where they enlarge all the food? That's what you can do, is there would be no more hunger. You can enlarge all the food and
there'd never be
hunger or starvation again.
I wish that had been established by the character where he's like going, well, there were all those times where there just wasn't enough food for mom and dad to feed me, so now I want to make sure every kid has food.
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, if you want character establishment, man, you've got to ride the 3D MGM experience.
Oh, sure. Down,
where we fly through his picnic lunch, and he describes how if only the McRib could be bigger. Hey, Bond, you're going to be in the new Flintstone movies in 3 years?
Yep, he sure was.
He was Barney. That's a Stay Tuned and a Half, right?
Oh, man. Did you watch SCTV? Have you ever seen any of that?
Oh, sure, Bob McKenzie.
Yep.
He's the best. He's coming back. I mean, the onus for us doing this, we're recording it like a couple months ago, but he announced that he's coming back for a remake.
Yeah.
A Disney Plus remake.
With Josh Gad as his son.
But he's honestly great in this. I mean, the kids are fine, too. Like, I don't think there's a bad character, except for maybe that the youngest kid, Nick. Maybe I have a thing for Nick's being inferior to me, but...
The one who wants to be his dad, but his dad kind of ignores him.
The one with the bag glasses and the spectacular mullet. The one who got cut from Mighty Ducks for being a loser.
Well, now, here's the thing. This is the most important line to me in the first act. It doesn't even come from Wayne. It comes from...
his wife?
No, it comes from the neighbor dad, where he's if he wants to feel big, he should act big, which is... All those 1950s shrinking stories.
Yeah.
Well, all those 1950s shrinking stories were a subtext about how the traditional definition of masculinity was going away.
Having a huge penis. I mean,
yeah,
what?
Basically. I'm
getting larger. Larger.
No, I agree. I think they're trying to take a little bit of that away. Is that, you know, you don't have to be. You can be a hero in different ways.
One of the notes I've got is, and I quote. So many problems in the 80s could have been fixed if dads hugged their sons more.
And didn't vote for Reagan. I mean, but But I mean, the whole thing about it is like the kid wants to impress the dad because the dad is ignoring him. And the other hand, it's just, I guess, setting up Little Giants in a couple weeks. A dad who wants his kid to be as good at football as he is.
Yeah.
And... He's not big enough? Well, here's some weights. You get bigger, kid. Here's a vaguely homoerotic documentary called Pumping Iron.
Good Lord.
I'm coming at the gym. I'm coming in the stores. And you're just like, yep. He's going to be my governor one day. California's a weird place.
Yep.
Yeah. And then I guess we should get into these other kids. So there's Russ. What's Russ's little brother's name? I didn't even bother.
I didn't either.
Dipshit. Is he played by anyone?
He looks like that kid from Terminator 2 who is John Connor's friend.
Well, frankly, he looks like... That's Bobby Butnick, excuse me.
Oh.
Right? No, it looks like Devon Sawa, but I don't think it's Devon Sawa.
We'll talk about Devon Sawa later.
All right, girl.
So it's Nick. Nick is a son. The daughter's Amy.
Amy.
And then the neighbors is Russ and the brother... Crap.
Ron. He's Jared Rushton.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's a little... He's a little wiener kid. And, you know, he's been acting a lot because his IMDb picture is him from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. he's also in Big.
I'm sure... Oh, yeah,
he's
that's
the best
right.
friend in Big.
That's right. He was Tom Hanks' friend. Yeah.
That's belly. Right.
I'm sure he's a very nice guy, and I'm sure he's had a very successful career.
He is not.
Well, outside of acting. I mean, it's like a Chunk in Goonies, who's a lawyer
now. I mean, he's also in possible Stay Tuned weird rape movie, Overboard, with Kurt Russell.
Oh, that one with Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn?
Yeah, he's one of Kurt Russell's kids.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Again, if a woman wakes up unconscious and doesn't remember who she is, don't pretend she's your wife. That is against the law.
All right, so...
Good to know.
Yeah. He was also in Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman. It just goes on and on. Oh! Here's where I remembered him from. He's in Pet Sematary 2. He's the friend. He's not the lead. He's the second... No!
I've never seen Pet Sematary 2.
Better than the first one.
But is it better than the new one?
I haven't seen the new one. Did you see the new one?
No, the new one actually looks too scary for me, which is a shock.
Oh, sweet summer child.
Oh, you... He's adorable when he's scared. He holds on tight. He's a cuddler. That Matt Quinn is a cuddler.
I, the sower of monsters and reaper of nightmares, have found something that has outmatched me. Something
he's
has gone wrong.
Than I thought he has then.
You know what we need to do? What was that horrible Jennifer Aniston movie we saw? You remember the one where she's like dating Vince Vaughn?
Oh, The Breakup?
The Breakup.
The Breakup?
Her and I were tricked into seeing The Breakup because we thought it would be a comedy, and it was an awkward breakup movie.
Ooh.
Oh, goddamn.
Yeah.
Her, she was my movie friend in high school and college.
I had those.
Anyway, let's talk about this movie. We've been wandering because...
Well, here's something please. That I would like to mention. Back in the 1980s, everyone seemed to be like mining 1950s sci-fi for remakes. So we had The Thing, which was a 1950s sci-fi movie.
Sure.
We had The Fly. We had The Blob. But those were all just intended for adults. And if you're demented enough to show The Fly remake to your 10-year-old, you're severely fucked up. But anyway, the fact that this is aimed at children seems more appropriate because this is supposed to be a 1950s sci-fi knockoff. The fact that it's aimed at kids just feels more right.
Well, 80s kids movies seem like they're more adult-oriented than kids movies today, like Gremlins, Labyrinth, this.
I don't think this is necessarily adult-oriented.
Not adult-oriented, but they didn't assume the kids would scare so easily. Indiana Jones?
Or they did, but they just didn't care.
So like Nick was alluding to, I think this was unique in the fact that it wasn't animated, and I love that they did something different. I actually thought the miniature effects were really
remarkable.
Good, especially for that time. Like, it was groundbreaking. Well, and it just makes it look, it looks fun. Like, when they're sliding down the leaf on a slide, that looks fun as hell. Like, I wanted to do that. I want to have a huge oatmeal pie.
Oh, no, the shrunken backyard, you know? Is great.
Yeah. So, I love that the miniature effects were actually really cool and different from that time.
And I appreciate not only that it's real, but they knew exactly what the limits are and made around it. Nowadays, the problem for me with most of these kids' sci-fi movie kind of things are that you can tell that they're not acting with anything. It's just green screen and a tennis ball and a string, right?
Yep.
And so this, they're like, look, we can make this set. We can't do everything you want, but this is what it's going to be. And so they're like, all right, well, it's going to be 90 minutes, and we're going to do what we can. And therefore, it doesn't always make the most sense. It's not always complete, but everything is real. The scene ends. There's a beginning to a scene and an end to a scene. And, like, there's some, like, Ray Harryhausen bullshit where a scorpion's fighting an ant, and it looks like something, right? We were talking about...
Auntie.
Naomi and I watched
it. So sad. Spoiler alert. Auntie dies.
Auntie dies. And she was like, the red ant is mean. And I'm like, that's the scorpion. She goes, the scorpion is mean.
Well, that makes no sense, though, because that's not how ants act. Ants aren't dogs.
Who gives a shit?
Also, it's impossible for that to be a baby because a baby ant is a maggot.
That's true. But, like, I will say, despite wet blanket here, what's fun about this is that it's a kid adventure. Because, like, this is, like, early but still, like, prime kid power bullshit. But what it matters, it's not. They're not sticking it to the adults in any way. Like, if this was 1994... they would be sticking it to the adults, man, and kids would be... No. This is a survival horror movie. This is practically body horror here. And then Zelinsky is just an impotent parent who's trying to deal with it, right?
Speaking of body horror, they say that this shrink ray works by essentially compressing the space between the molecules in a body.
Yeah.
That means it's going to have the same mass, which means these kids shouldn't be able to walk.
They had a whole discussion on TV tropes. Yes, I'll bring that up for the whole discussion of how this actually would work. It was actually pretty interesting. There's people arguing about physics. Someone was saying they could walk, but each step would be like hammering a nail.
Basically,
so they'd be like stepping, like sinking every time they took a step into anything. It was.
But Daniel, did you not appreciate the beautiful 80s technology? They were fine because of all the static blue around them.
Oh, yes, yes. Especially when they were on that B.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that bee was the best with its furry butt.
He is the best. I wanted to ride the bee. It just looked fun. And I also read that they did the world record or something at the time for the amount of foam they used for the effects of this. Like, that's just cool.
I thought this movie looked phenomenal.
I do miss practical effects.
Well, and it's not just that they're practical effects, it's that there's some cool freaking animatronics in there. And, you know, some of the green screening doesn't hold up great, but. It's filming in miniatures. It's like watching a Godzilla picture where they built a set, they superimpose things. It's really solid.
There was that one bit where they borrow a shot from Evil Dead.
They do?
With the bee flying to Rick Moranis, and then he's suddenly like ducking away.
Yeah, it's very, there's some Raimi. Bad. Well, it's Raimi like throughout. Like there's that scene where they're flying through and he has a bat, and then it's not until after he uses the bat, he's like, Nick doesn't play baseball.
Yep.
And then there's this just weird moment that I'm like, I don't play baseball. This movie knows me. but no, it's just, it's the absurdity of the moment and then the general realization that does make me think 1970s and 1980s horror, which is fun. And to me, what's most spectacular for this, I guess, I watched the sequel as well, Honey, I Blew Up the Kids, which frankly, if we do this, it's not really an episode because it's the same plot.
Yeah.
But...
Oh, I remember that movie. I think I saw it in theaters.
I saw it in theaters as well.
Yep.
Frankly, I think I missed this one and that one in theaters. I was watching Batman Returns.
probably the better movie.
Probably is wrong. It is the better movie. It's the like the neutered, the impotent version of this because there's no horror. Like this one, like the insects truly are horrifying. Like I was watching it with my toddler daughter and she loved every minute of it. But whenever the insect was first introduced, she jumped because it's real. It's scary. It's very visceral. But in the second one, there's just like a weird, like mildly racist Indian character that's in the baby's pocket and it grows up to full size and they think it's a person in the car.
I don't remember the car thing.
I can guarantee that.
By the way, did you notice that Lucy from Twin Peaks is in this?
I did.
That was great.
Fill it out. It's like Chris Lloyd. Chris Lloyd shows up in something. I'm going to see it because, A, like Daniel alluded to, Back to the Future is one of my favorites, but he's just phenomenal. You know an actor's good? When you try to think of the movie without them and it breaks, actors, actresses, whatever, and it's like if you don't have Kristen Wiig in or Melissa McCarthy in Bridesmaids, movie doesn't work, right? If you don't have Bill Murray in Ghostbusters, it's not the same movie. And if you don't have Chris Lloyd or Rick Moranis in these movies, it's just not a movie. I can't, like, the only other actor I can think of from the 80s is Harry Deason. You know,
Eddie Deason?
Eddie Deason. You know, he's the guy who's like this, and he's the nerd character. Rick Moranis is such a softer, kinder nerd. He's such, like, he's a delight in this movie, and this movie doesn't work without that charm, because unless you make it the hardcore horror, if it was like Jeff Goldblum, and it's gritty, and it's horrible, that's a movie. But, like, any other kind-hearted dad nerd, just, this is not a movie. Like, Emilio Estevez with glasses. Right.
That was one of the objections I had to this movie when I kept thinking about Auntie, which we should get into a little more what happens. In the first act, the kids get shrunk and they're in the backyard.
Wait,
that's what happens. Yeah, I know. It's
spoiler alert.
Tell me about it. So the second act is pretty much them going through the backyard. And among the things they see is like a river of dog urine. They find like an Oreo or an oatmeal cookie.
An oatmeal cream pie.
Oatmeal cream pie.
Right. Okay, that was what it was.
Oh, and as I guess place setting for the mise-en-scene, they're people who don't care about their backyard.
Right.
So the grass is all overgrown and they've hired a kid to mow it, which is kind of the... You know, the Chekhov's gun.
That's the third act.
It's a remote control 80s proto Roomba.
Right.
Frankly, I wish I'd had that as a kid mowing the lawn. But anyway.
The daughter Amy almost drowns and has to get rescued.
Right. And they end up on a back of a bee and they end up dropped on a flower. And
sleep on a Lego.
Right. Well,
Inside a Lego. Yeah.
Well, there's that whole bit where they meet this random ant that they name Auntie. It's loyal. It follows them around. And the entire time I'm thinking that, and as Lauren, I think, said earlier, there's a fight scene between the ant and the scorpion where the scorpion kills the ant. But,
right.
And I specifically remember that bit from The Fly, you know, insects don't have politics.
Right.
Then I start wondering, why am I not watching The Fly again?
Well, and there is some weird, like... I don't know. The kids need a grounding. Like, they need a connection to this world that would make them want to stay, and that's the one they found. It does make you realize this is clearly budget, man. Like, I'm sure in the script it was like a butterfly. Like, this is a kids' movie. There should be a butterfly. And, like, frankly, I'm shocked. Because the pitch to me is almost a Star Trek episode. Like, it could have been Alice in Wonderland or something. Like, you have the nerd, you have the charismatic guy, you have the token lady type. Like, you practically have the core of the Starship Enterprise landing in, like, a giant world. I just kept expecting there to be something.
Did the holoduck malfunction in your pitch or something?
I mean, this is more like TOS. This is like, my God. There's all these big insects and no one for me to have sex with. Hey, a sister.
Captain Kirk visits Brom,
but she wants to go to the mall and date someone who's not me. Something is wrong.
I mean, it's the 1980s, so everyone just wants to go to a generic mall for generic reasons. Although she's there to meet a dude, and then Russ is like, you know, I'm a dude with pretty hair, and she's like, you almost have pretty hair.
Okay, what the fuck was up with that scene, though? Where the daughter...
Coming at me hard there, Daniel.
The daughter quotes to have and have not in the middle of a kid's movie. What the fuck?
Well, she's got a nerd parent. Maybe something she learned that from him.
Right.
Oh no, by the way, it's clearly from the mom who's like, marry someone who's cute because your dad is driving the shit crazy. Because they're about to have a divorce in the middle of this.
Well, that makes sense because the mom probably seems like someone with humanities and social skills.
I'm just going to remind everybody of Tom Servo's rule of movie references. Never reference a good movie.
But basically, this isn't a bad movie.
It's not necessarily bad, but it's just To Have and Have Not is a much better movie.
Well, right. I mean, it's like you... Okay, so there's this young director, you may have heard of him, George Lucas, and he really just wanted to make The Hidden Fortress, but he added wizards, and it was bullshit. And they called that movie Sparky's Magic Voyage.
THX 1238, my friend.
It's Robert Duvall, my friend.
And Donald Pleasance.
It's a great movie. Don't lie. It's a good movie. All right. So we've talked about Auntie. And Lauren, you have
done that.
You have notes. What should we talk about?
Oh, no. I was just going to say that I respect the hell out of Rick Moranis because the reason he's taken such a hiatus off his acting career is because his wife died.
That's right.
And he helped raise his children. And that, to me, gives huge props. Like, that's why he took such a hiatus. So I'll support him whatever he does now because I think that was an awesome thing to do and not everyone would do.
And I just hope he comes back, like, in earnest because he truly is what makes and breaks these movies. Because, again, we're going to talk to Rick Moranis. We accidentally made a theme month. And none of these movies work without him.
And what I also learned is Chevy Chase and John Candy were both offered the role of
that
Wayne Szalinski.
That would have
worked. Chevy Chase and John Candy were both offered, but John Candy recommended Rick Moranis. So it wouldn't have worked with anyone else, I think.
Because John Candy is a decent human being. Chevy Chase... Yeah. Well, what they did was they hired Chevy Chase and they had him hug the daughter, and everyone was like, no, that can't happen. You.
Chevy Chase is a humongous asshole.
Yeah. I mean, the idea that he could reproduce with anyone is just weird.
He's got a daughter, I think.
Does she talk to him anymore?
I don't know.
He sarcasmed his way into those pants.
Well, I think Rick Moranis, Martin Scorsese's making a documentary about SCTV, and I think he's going to be in that, too.
He better be. I love him. I mean, frankly, what's the Bob McKenzie character? They did a movie, right?
Oh, Strange Brew. Strange Brew is a
phenomenal.
Yeah. No, it's a Stay Tuned.
Really?
Oh, big time.
Okay. Well, I'll let you make that judgment call. Nice. I mean, my daughter and I have gotten into Ghostbusters, and just to see him go running around going, are you the Keymaster, man? Like, he's so good in those movies.
You know, that was supposed to be John Candy, too.
I thought, yes, it was. And Slimer is an ode to John Belushi because I guess fat people are gross when they die. I don't know what that's about. But that first Ghostbusters is great. And whenever he runs around, by the way, for those of you in TV land, they remastered the 2009 Ghostbusters video game, and it's based on that monstrous 1,200-page script that Dan Aykroyd did.
Oh,
and it's
Lord.
The last thing Harold Ramis did before he died. So it's all the original voice actors. Dan Aykroyd is in it, Bill Murray's in it, and Harold Ramis is in it. Even Winston Zeddemore is Ernie Hudson, man.
Wow.
And it's phenomenal. It's funny. It's great. Play it. Just play it, man. It'll make you happy.
So we've been jumping around different 80s comedies, and we've kind of hit what happens in the second act. They're traversing through the backyard. At the beginning of the third act is the lawnmower scene that I think Matt discussed earlier, and Nick.
Well, the dad finally discovers, figures out what happened.
Right.
Because his tiny couch is broken.
Oh, right.
Tiny couch.
Yes. Which, how did that survive not getting swept up when he broke the machine apart?
Because he's terrible at cleaning because he's a dude.
Okay, fair enough.
I mean, that's the 1980s answer.
Right.
But anyway, they survive the lawnmower because Rick Moranis and who plays his wife in this movie? I've already forgotten.
Tall blonde woman.
Well, that was funny. That scene where Rick Moranis has to stand on the steps so he actually looks as tall as his wife.
Yeah, Marcia Strassman.
Right. That happens, and they somehow get inside thanks to the dog, whose name is Cork, which I assume means that mom and dad are big James Joyce fans. Pause for laughter. Pause for laughter. Thank you.
Or wine.
And I think the dog has a character arc, too, because he's not afraid of the cat anymore.
Also, I'm going to correct you both. It's Quark.
That's what I said, Quark.
Yeah. It's a sci-fi particle. Because he's a nerd.
It's Finnegan's Wake is where they got the name for that particle.
That's right.
I'm still convinced Finnegan's Wake is just like an epic troll. But anyway, they get back inside, and that's when they try and get everyone's attention. And that's where you get the Cheerios scene.
Yeah, so the Cheerio scene is, if you haven't seen it, it's kind of the most famous scene. He gets stuck to the dog. Like, they catch the dog. They're trying to get the dog the whole time. They're holding onto his whiskers, and one of the kids, Nick, the runt of the litter, drops into the breakfast cereal, and they're all trying to get the attention of the dad as he's about to be consumed by his father, which might be the most Freudian thing.
Seriously.
Right.
If that scene wasn't in the commercial, I'd have probably wanted to see this movie when it came out, because I remember that scene in the commercial being scary. Because
it is pure horror.
It is
oh,
horror.
The Cheerios scene? Yeah, that's horrifying.
Like, the whole thing about it is, like, everyone's trying to scream, get their attention, and it's the ultimate embodiment of childhood where you're trying to get someone's attention and no one's listening. And then at the last minute, the dad just happens to glance down that there's something black, like a little black speck in his food, mm-hmm. and notices that it's screaming at him and is totally going to lead a normal life after all of this.
Yeah, how does that work? He sees the black speck in the milk, and that's when he realizes, oh, yeah, this is indeed my son.
Well, and it's funny because the whole rest of the time, they're acting like, oh, my God, we have to be careful where we step. We have to look everywhere. They have those weird helmets on with, like, huge magnifying glasses. Yeah. And they're hovering off the ground just barely. And at one point, they slip and they fall. And he's like...
oh, yeah, that whole thing where he's, like, tied to the clothesline and, like, trying to look around the backyard.
At the end, he's like, I'm just going to eat things without looking at it. My goodness, you pretentious little prat.
That's, by the way, where Lucy comes in, because Max Headroom has to tell his fishing buddies that he can't go fishing, and Lucy is his friend's wife.
Do you want me to tell you an embarrassing thing? I don't think it's embarrassing, but I knew Max Headroom from Sesame Street. He appeared on Sesame Street like
he
two
did?
Or three times. Yeah, as Max Headroom, yeah. And like 88 or 89, like when we were kids. Although my favorite is that Canadian hack where someone hacked the TV show.
Oh, that happened in Chicago.
Chicago, the Chicago hack. For those of you who like creepy things, someone hacked all the Chicago airwaves and did a parody of Max Headroom. They've never caught the guy, but they actually hacked the TV waves. That's
now, I've
cool.
actually watched the Max Headroom TV show.
I saw it later when I was older and you know, had access to alcohol.
It was fine. I mean, Bill Maher showed up in it randomly.
You know what? For those of you who haven't seen it and are exactly my age, it's the Space Ghost Coast to Coast show, effectively, exactly.
Well, a fictionalized version because, you know, there's all that stuff that happens and then Space Ghost just randomly shows up.
Well, oh, I thought you were saying because also Space Ghost is real.
Well, I mean, yeah. We'll
Space
talk
Ghost
off mic.
Real, obviously.
He's the best. We're wrapping it up. Do you have anything in your notes? She showed up with, like, pages of notes because she's the best guest we've had.
Prepared. No, I love this movie. It was better than I remembered. Is it perfect? No, but I just felt it was different and unique and just brings back that nostalgia, which I think is a big point of why we're doing this podcast.
Right.
I remember going to Disney and riding the bee and the land, you know, and everything. It's cute. It's different. It was not animated. I love that they tried to do something different.
Cool. Matt?
It was better than I expected. I would probably have liked it more if I was younger. Maybe not a little kid, but six, seven maybe. I would have loved it.
Right.
I don't think it's a bad movie. I think, especially if you're a kid, it's a very creative movie, and I really liked how it was pulling from all those classic 1950s sci-fi films like The Incredible Shrinking Man. And in that sense, it's really creative. But while I don't think it's bad, I think it could have been a lot better because it didn't have that sense of irony that something like Reanimator has, which, considering that's who's supposed to make it, it plays it too straight. It plays the story too straight. And after a while, it's like, come on. There's no way you can take this seriously in 1989. Plus, I will also say this, that joke about French class isn't funny.
You're welcome.
Although, yeah, still,
talk about that.
Although still, you know what? It's on Disney Plus. If you've got kids, show it to your kids, and you know what? They're probably going to have a great time, and it's probably going to make them interested in sci-fi in general. So knock yourself out.
Yeah, actually, you at the end touched exactly the point I wanted to touch, which is this is why Disney Plus is good. I'm still bummed that like they haven't made Simpsons in the proper 4:3 proportion. Like, there's crap in there. But this scratches that itch because this movie's like impossible to find without Disney Plus, right? Yeah. Like, I'm not going to stumble across this DVD somewhere. Like, it's really hard. Like, I have an old VHS copy, but after Space Jam, it ain't that. So that's dead. So for me, this is the kind of movie that Disney Plus was made for, baby. It's not great, but they use practical effects. It's like a middle-of-the-road idea that then with Disney, they had enough money to do fairly well. And I will agree with Daniel, it's not perfect, but since they keep it right at 90 minutes, I'll forgive a lot of mediocrity. So yeah, no, I give it a thumbs up. And again, especially compared to the sequels, which one happened way after it needed to, which is Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves, which is the third one. Which came out like 2003, I think.
It was 97.
And it was co-written by Mystery Science Theater great Joel Hodgson. It loses the momentum a decade after the first one came out. This one and the second one are stupid, but they're fun. And this one is scary. So I'd say watch it. But, you know, other than that, I guess. Oh, the one thing I wanted to keep saying. This had something that I love from the 80s, which is an animated introduction.
Yes.
And an animated introduction at this point, which specifically felt like it was done by John Kay.
It wasn't. I looked it up. But
I know.
It feels
it,
like
looks
it was.
Like, I looked it up, too, because I was desperately trying to give John Krzysztofalusky some credit, because it looks like a Ren and Stimpy beginning, but it wasn't. But other than that, the pedigree of this movie is fun and stupid. It's over the top. See it, and you'll love Rick Moranis in it, and outdated 80s references. However, we have run out of time. So one more time, I'm going to give our Patreon plug. And if you're unaware of what Patreon is, Google Patreon and give me money.
Shame on you if you don't know what Patreon is.
We have a handful of subscribers already, but we've hit 1 million people who've streamed us. We've had almost 43,000 extra downloads. We have exclusive content. At this point, we're doing the Alien movie series, and we're looking to expand it. If we hit $100 a month, we're going to do Batman the Animated Series episode by episode for the first season. And if we beat that, I think we're going to switch to X-Men for the next season. We have an exclusive prescription, which is a monthly newsletter where we answer questions, and Matt gives an extended how I would have done it, which he promises is not going to be a rehash of his blog. And we answer questions from you, the audience. So we appreciate what you've done for us for the last 6 years, and we hope to keep doing this long into the future. And your financial support not only helps that, but it makes us know that someone's actually out there listening other than the Russian bots. With that in mind, in a couple weeks, we're coming back with Little Giants. And stay tuned next week and every future week as we put another piece of your past on trial. Thanks, guys.
Life Between Childhood is a product of Blue Letter Podcast. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman, produced by Nick Hoffman, Daniel Sutter, and Matthew Quinn, and edited by Daniel Sutter. Our theme song is Surf Finney by Kevin MacLeod from incompetech.com. License under Creative Commons license by attribution 3.0.